Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
This on a Friday is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy Taylor's off today. Veteran newsman John Goulet will be accessing all the latest breaking news. It's a very exciting Friday. Look at my guest today, Urban Meyer. Eric Mangini's got video. Peter King, Tom Telesco, Chargers GM. J-Mac has tomorrow's headlines today in a couple of hours. Very, very exciting. So, I'm watching preseason stuff last night. And it's very easy to just discard everything from preseason, right? Like, it doesn't matter, don't watch it. But be very careful about that. The coaches are watching. The coaches are making selections. It's preseason. Bill Belichick will cut guys based on performances last night. It matters. These are pro football players. And you don't go crazy on it. You don't want to sound ridiculous as a sportscaster saying this is great and this is terrible. But there are moments. Dak Prescott blew everybody away in the preseason. I was a doubter. I'm like, oh, come on, give me a break. It mattered. It showed us who Dak Prescott was. He wasn't intimidated by the moment as the Cowboy quarterback out of college. Victor Cruz, a wide receiver undrafted out of UMass, had a great preseason. He went on to lead the Giants the next 3 years in catches. Victor Cruz had an unbelievable preseason. So, you know, it matters. Coaches are making decisions on film of games. It matters. Here's what also matters. It's easy to spot bad. Arizona's bad. Cliff Kingsbury looks over his head, and Kyler Murray is not throwing the ball down the field. I mean, that game last night for Arizona, I don't care what you want to say, Oakland led 26-0. Oakland moved the ball at will. Oakland's defense doesn't offer much. Kyler Murray, running for his life, couldn't throw the ball accurately down the field. They have Vance Joseph, who bounced around the league, got fired in Denver. Now he's the defensive coordinator. Obviously, the players are not aligned with what Vance Joseph's trying to do. Kyler Murray looks small. Again, he has had 5 drives so far in the preseason. 33 yards, 13 yards, minus 6 yards, minus 10 yards, minus 10 yards. Now, I know he's young, and I know their offensive line is terrible. Josh Rosen had to be watching that, you know, with a little smirk. But remember, Arizona didn't just hire a college coach. Arizona hired a super young college coach. They didn't just hire a college coach who struggled. They hired a college coach who had a terrible record at Texas Tech. Listen, it's hard to spot great in sports. It's easy to spot bad. Chuck Pagano, fake punt against New England. Oh, you got to fire him. Markelle Fultz, number one pick for the Sixers. Oh, crap, he can't shoot. He's a shooter. It is easy to spot bad in sports. Now, spotting very good and great can be difficult. There are a lot of players in the NFL and the NBA. They're late bloomers. They work in certain systems. They don't work in other systems. I mean, nobody would deny that Tom Brady with Belichick is magic. Tom Brady with a bad coach may not be as magic. So spotting good and great, it can be difficult. You have to really watch. Some guys are good in certain systems. Some guys are good with certain coaches. Some guys are late bloomers physically, emotionally. But bad's easy to spot. And Arizona right now is bad. That's the worst team I've seen in the preseason. They look disorganized, disjointed. The defense is a mess. Kyler Murray's not throwing the ball down the field. So I'm going to go out on a limb and have a strong opinion this morning about the preseason. The Miami Dolphins and the Arizona Cardinals will not win their division based on what I've seen in the preseason. Okay, and in the NFL, by the way, is not forgiving. Okay, I just want you to think about this. Think about all the years Pete Carroll has been coaching in the NFL. Position coach, coordinator, head coach. He gets to face Cliff Kingsbury twice. Think about the mismatch in knowledge, experience, personnel that Pete Carroll will have twice against Arizona and Cliff Kingsbury. And that's not a shot at Cliff. I think Cliff's smart. But he had a losing record, like a bad record, 19-35 at Texas Tech. And you can say, well, it's Texas Tech. Yeah, Mike Leach coached there. He was great. Bowl game every year. Winning record. So, listen, when your alma mater fires you, nobody's alma mater wants to fire him. Cliff Kingsbury's alma mater fired him. Okay, they didn't want to do that. That's the last thing you ever want to do. But what I'm watching Arizona right now, you know, it's bad. Like, you can't just say, well, it's a different offense. No. Nobody wants to look terrible in the preseason. New England played Detroit in the preseason, and New England jumped out, boom, boom, drive, touchdown. New England this year has a young team, younger than last year. They'll have 8 or 9 players in the last 2 drafts who are getting substantial time. They want to leave a positive imprint on their players. They're going to take this stuff seriously. Tom Brady's yelling, screaming at guys yesterday in practice. Don't tell me preseason doesn't matter at all. Of course it does. It's where we saw Victor Cruz. Tony Romo, by the way, had a great preseason game. Goulet probably remembers this, and people went, who the hell's Tony Romo? He's undrafted from Eastern Illinois. Remember that, John?
Yeah, Parcells played in the entire game. Didn't start the starter and didn't bring in a third stringer.
Yeah, so it matters. Arizona looks bad, disjointed. In a division, by the way, where you've got Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, and Pete Carroll. They're pretty good. All right, I thought about this. And again, I want to shift gears, but I want to talk about something. Again, it's not big, but it's something with Aaron Rodgers. Odell Beckham, hurt again. Odell Beckham's missed 16 of his last 32 games. He's hurt again. I'm not saying it's a major injury, but it's something. Aaron Rodgers was supposed to play last night. He had a tight back. He missed a start. Listen, he's had a concussion. He's had missed 7 games with a broken collarbone. Then he missed 9 games with a broken collarbone. He had a sprained MCL. You and I both know he was healthy in about 7 games last year. You know, 8 max. It's not the end of the world. But I do think there are 5 quarterbacks in this league. Cam Newton, Jimmy Garoppolo, Carson Wentz, Andrew Luck, and Aaron Rodgers. And they're all very talented. Some more talented than others. Luck's more talented, I think, than Cam and Garoppolo. Aaron could be more talented than all of them, except maybe Carson Wentz. But of those 5 quarterbacks, ask yourself. Now, Marcus Mariota and Derek Carr have been hurt too, but I'm not sure their teams are fully committed to them right now regardless. These are 5 quarterbacks: Aaron, Andrew, Cam, Carson, Jimmy. The teams are emotionally and financially totally committed to these 5 arguable Hall of Famers. And ask yourself this. If any one of these during the season, including Aaron Rodgers, suffered an injury, those teams would have to consider drafting a quarterback high next year. And it sounds ridiculous, right? But Aaron's 35, had injuries, has had an ad-lib style that can put him in the crosshairs of contact. That sort of sounds like Brett Favre. Brett Favre was dinged up, though he played at about 35. He had an ad-lib style that sometimes put him in the crosshair of contact. Who did the Packers draft when Brett Favre was 35? Aaron Rodgers. Listen, Green Bay has addressed all of their personnel issues in the last 2 years. They needed corners, linebackers, a center, and a tight end. They've drafted all of them. And I think they've drafted well. I love the tight end from Texas A&M. I love the center they got from Mississippi State. So Green Bay has addressed their issues. Green Bay enters this season young at certain positions like corner. Young at certain positions like maybe center. But they're not untalented. They're not the New York Jets that have a hole at corner. They're not the Texans that have a hole in their offensive line unit. Green Bay could absolutely next year in their first or second pick say, we're drafting a quarterback. I mean, what does Green Bay need? They went out and solved their linebacker issues. They got a free agent safety and drafted one. That was a hole no longer. They've addressed corner, center, tight end, and they've always developed very smartly offensive and defensive linemen. So you think about this. In the NFL, you have to be proactive, not react to a disaster. This is why Bill Belichick, for years, even when Tom Brady was in his prime, every other year he would draft a quarterback with a pretty good draft pick. This is why the Rams last year, even though Todd Gurley is still a horse, they went and drafted with their second pick a running back. In fact, traded up to get him. This is why Carolina went out and got Will Greer. You know, Ron Rivera knows in the NFL, you can't react to disaster. You have to be proactive. Rodgers, Luck, Cam, Wentz, Jimmy G. Those are the five guys. Those organizations are fully financially and emotionally committed. An injury for any one of those guys. Are you going to tell me if Jimmy Garoppolo gets hurt in week six that Kyle Shanahan is not going to call his GM John Lynch? They're not going to have lunch, sit down and go, hey, we got to have a plan here. You know, Kyle Shanahan's like, this is my first NFL job. Okay, I'm not going into a season with C.J. Beathard and Nate Mullins playing eight games. We got to go after another quarterback. Are you going to tell me Green Bay, if Aaron Rodgers gets hurt again, Mark Murphy's not sitting there thinking, hey, this is when we drafted Aaron to back up Brett Favre. We got to start thinking about this stuff. Carolina did it last year with Will Greer. And as much as I like Andrew Luck, listen, if he misses the first two games to start the year and then in week 12 gets hurt again, you got to draft a quarterback. The Colts have already addressed corner, offensive line. They've already addressed running back, linebacker, pass rusher. I'm not saying the Colts are great at everything or the Packers are great everywhere, but they don't have big holes in their organization, in their units, in their personnel. As much as I like Andrew Luck, if he gets banged up again midseason, you got to think about drafting another quarterback. That is just the truth.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Oh, it was so much fun watching Sam Darnold last night. Sam Darnold was amazing. Smarts, accuracy, athletic ability, instincts, three drives, nearly perfect. It was really impressive. You know I like Sam Darnold. But before I go into the craziness of Sam Darnold, and he last night between the Giants and the Falcons, he's just a tremendous player. You know, don't forget, he's bigger than Baker Mayfield. He's stronger than Baker Mayfield. He's more athletic than Baker Mayfield. I mean, hell, he played linebacker in high school in basketball. And he's also, I think, more mature than Baker Mayfield. That's not to say Baker's not going to succeed in the NFL. Baker's going to have success in the NFL, but where you enter sports is not even. Sam Darnold played 20 less games in college than Baker Mayfield. Sam Darnold's 2 years younger than Baker Mayfield. Sam Darnold did not have great college coaches. His coordinator, T. Martin, got fired, and his head coach, Clay Helton, wins 10 games this year or he gets fired. Baker Mayfield had Bob Stoops. Baker Mayfield had, in my opinion, the best offensive coach by a mile in college football, Lincoln Riley. Okay, so Baker had more starts, older, great, not good college coaching, great college coaching. Then he goes to Cleveland where he gets Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb, David Njoku. Those aren't good weapons. Those are amazing weapons. In fact, Cleveland's got so much damn talent, they could trade Duke Johnson. Because Duke Johnson wasn't going to play for Cleveland. They had so much talent, they traded an offensive lineman to the Giants, a really good offensive lineman, an interior lineman. So Cleveland has a surplus of offensive talent for a guy that's 2 years older, had great college coaching. But in the media, very few of us have the courage to go against the grain and say, Darnold's better. He's not better now because he's younger, entered the league with nothing to work with, had, to me, average to below average college coaching. But Darnold now has a running back, an upgraded O-line, an upgraded coach, a legitimate slot receiver. Now, the Jets aren't perfect. You know, they've got a center that had to come out of retirement. They don't have a number one receiver. They're terrible at corner. They won't be a great football team. There's still a draft and a free agent signing period away from being really, really a playoff caliber team at the highest order. Cleveland could get there this year. Why? Because they've got more good players for Baker Mayfield. But I remember years ago, Shaq and Kobe, the Lakers made a choice, and they said, bye-bye, Shaq, we're going to keep Kobe. And I said it at the time. It was the right move. But it wouldn't feel like the right move for 2 years because Shaq went to a team willing to compete for a title. He went to D-Wade in Miami. And so for 2 years, everybody was like, you're wrong, Colin. Lakers are wrong. They chose the wrong guy. No, they chose the right guy. But the answer to every puzzle isn't solved immediately. Kobe, and I had this sourced at the highest levels of the Lakers front office, Kobe was a better practice player. Kobe was better with his body. Kobe was more committed. Kobe was more focused. Kobe had more great years left. And in the end, it was proven the Lakers made the right choice. But that doesn't work on social media. That doesn't work on Twitter. That doesn't work today. It's like, who's winning now? Who looks good now? That's the future. No, it's not. Tyreek Evans won Rookie of the Year. Steph Curry was in the same class. Michael Carter Williams won Rookie of the Year. Giannis and Victor Oladipo were in the same class. Now, I'm not insisting that Baker is Tyreek Evans or Victor Oladipo. I think Baker's going to have a really, really nice career. But if you're telling me, I've always said about quarterbacks, it's about 12 years. I don't give a rip about your rookie year. I don't even count Peyton Manning's rookie year. I don't care what it was. I don't care about Andrew Luck's rookie year. I don't care about any of these guys' rookie years. What I care about is about midway point to your second year and on. That'll tell me who you are. If you're not connecting middle of your second year, if you're not picking stuff up, like I don't think Kyler Murray's going to star. I do think the Arizona situation's a mess, but I'm not going to totally judge Kyler Murray. I don't think all of it's his issue. He's got a bad DC. The coach is a college coach. But I'll say it again, and I don't care if it gets any blowback because I couldn't give a rip. I've spent 25 years not giving a rip what people think about my opinions. I've got them sourced. I believe it. I trust people, and I trust my instincts and eyes. Sam Darnold, for 12 to 14 years, I'll take him over Baker. He just entered the league at a really bad point. Josh Rosen entered in a tough spot. Lamar Jackson entered Baltimore Ravens. I mean, the Baltimore Ravens over the last 10 years have a very good infrastructure that allowed Lamar Jackson to look better than Josh Rosen first year by a mile. Who do I think knows better football? Josh Rosen. I think if you put Josh Rosen in Baltimore and Lamar Jackson in Miami and Arizona, it wouldn't look the same. So my takeaway on all this stuff is nobody in the media ever wants to take blowback. I'll take Sam Darnold, 12 to 14 years, size, athletic ability, durability, toughness, athletic ability, maturity over Baker. Not saying Baker won't work, but what I am saying is nobody's willing to just say Darnold was number one on significantly more draft boards than Baker. That is not disputable, just not Cleveland's, who also, for the record, drafted Johnny Manziel in the first round. He was not even on most of the best teams' draft boards.
What's going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast. That's me. That's my podcast. Brought to you by Colin Cowherd's Podcast Network. You like Colin's show? You'll like mine. Talking all football. Used to work in the NFL. Now I talk. And you better believe I'm diving into Kyler Murray. Bill O'Brien. Is he lost as a GM? Jimmy Garoppolo throws 5 picks in practice. Doesn't matter. I'll talk about it all on this show. Three and Out with me, John Middlecoff.
This is a great, great teaching moment by Tom Brady. So I'm going to show you a piece of tape in about 2 minutes here. Remember, was it earlier this week, Greg, or was it last week when I said I got great advice? A gentleman, my first job out of college, he was a former baseball coach. He was my first real boss. His name was Larry Kentop, recently passed away. And he gave me great advice that I've used in my life. And he was talking about when he used to be a baseball coach, if he had to deliver bad news to somebody or be critical of one of his players, he said he'd put his arm around him as he chewed him out, letting them know, I'm your guy, but I got to deliver bad news. I've used that as a parent before. When I talk to my son or my daughter, lovingly tell them I'm not really happy. But how stuff lands for young people, you know, you can bark. I'm an older guy. I can bark at somebody and think, yeah, they get it. But it can be too devastating, too harsh, too intense. And so I've learned that through the years is if I have to deliver bad news, there is a more elegant, sandpapered way, a little more refined way to deliver it. So remember when Baker Mayfield got in a little trouble? Duke Johnson said, you know, I something about wanting more carries. Baker kind of called him out publicly, and then Brown teammates went and confronted Baker on this. This is how you do it. Now, think about this. So, New England's got some young receivers right now. Gronk is retired, and Edelman's out with an injury. So, Brady in camp is dealing with all sorts of young guys. N'Keal Harry, the rookie. Broxton Berrios, who's a wide receiver who they drafted last year out of the University of Miami. He's dealing with a lot of young guys in camp right now. So Gronk's retired, Edelman's out, and Demaryius Thomas, by the way, is still rehabbing his injury. So one veteran's out, two are hurt. So Tom could bark a little more at those guys. But he had Braxton Berrios in a practice yesterday, and Braxton Berrios missed an assignment. And Tom was asked about it after the practice, and I want you to listen to how carefully Tom Brady chooses his words. And you can't see this on radio. You will see it on TV. How he is thinking about how this is going to land. He's smiling when he delivers criticism about Braxton Berrios. So watch and listen carefully to a real master putting his arm around you as he kicks you in the arse, Tom Brady.
I think so much is him expecting the ball to be a certain place and me expecting him to be a certain place. And I think the chemistry between a quarterback and a receiver, a quarterback and a tight end is so important because, you know, it's all anticipation. If you're waiting for things to happen in the NFL, you're too late. You know, you've got to just anticipate and expect them to be a certain way, and that's the way they turn out. And I have obviously a lot of experience, so I know where guys should be. So I'm trying to tell them, if you want the ball, this is where you got to be, which is hopefully good learning for those guys, and it's good teaching for me.
Hopefully it's good learning for them. It's good teaching for me. You see that, how he carefully constructs it? Very smart, very adult, not chewing out. What Tom's also saying is, I'll ghost you if you don't run the right route. That's what he does to Josh Gordon and to Randy Moss. Remember, Josh Gordon was one of his favorite targets? Then he had some personal problems. They faced the Steelers, only two targets to Josh Gordon. Tom wants you to be fully committed, fully prepared, fully focused. He'll ghost you in games. He won't throw to you. So yesterday in practice, a young guy made a mistake. But the way he delivers the message is adult, not accusatory, not too harsh. Probably barked at him during the practice. But then when the media asks about him, Baker Mayfield take this as a subtle gesture of learning. Be playful. In fact, yesterday it was funny. There was a Twitter moment for Brady as one of the new rookies for the Patriots went and tried to be Socrates on Twitter, Aristotle, and said, lowliness is young ambition's ladder, whereto the climber upward turns his face. But when he once attains the utmost round, he then unto the ladder turns his back, looks into the clouds, scorning the base degrees by which he did ascend. Julius Caesar, Act 2, Scene 1, Shakespeare. Brady responded on Twitter, study your playbook. Playful, fun. It's how you have to deliver messages when you're the quarterback, especially to young teammates. Put your arm around them when you're kicking their ass. It's called coaching. Brady doesn't want to coach, but it's really smart, and it's why he's the GOAT. Not snarky, as certain quarterbacks can be in Green Bay. Not above it all, not cocky, not bravado, supportive during criticism. Fun, likable during criticism.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
One of my favorite things to do, Goulet, you know this, I like to predict every year two really good teams that go into the tank and take two teams that were awful that double their wins. And I'm pretty good at it. And so it's interesting because I think this is the easiest year in terms of finding two bad teams that are going to double their wins. I think this is the easiest year I ever remember. San Francisco and the Jets. San Francisco was 4-12. I think they turn out to be a 9-7 football team. The Jets were 4-12. I think they're going to be somewhere in the 8-8 football team. But what's interesting, one AFC, one NFC, they're actually the same team. Now, first of all, let's talk schedule. They both got a scheduling break. So if San Francisco's sixth toughest out-of-division games, they got a break. Five are at home. Pittsburgh at home, Cleveland at home, Carolina at home, Green Bay at home, Atlanta at home. Only at New Orleans. So five of their six toughest games out of division, they got them all at home. Big break, traveling all the way for those teams west. The Jets similarly got a scheduling break. They never travel west. The furthest trip west all year for the Jets is at Cincinnati. Their road games are all Eastern time zone, at New England, at Philly, at Miami, at Jacksonville, at Washington, at Baltimore, at Buffalo. They're all in the same time zone. They have the least travel of any NFL team in like a decade. They got a scheduling break. Both also have the same key problem. They're lousy at corner, and they're having to depend on Richard Sherman, the old veteran in San Francisco, or Trumaine Johnson, who's currently hurt for the Jets. Both have intense, young, offensive-minded head coaches. San Francisco's big problem last year, they couldn't take the ball away. They were so bad at corner. Only seven takeaways, lowest ever. Jets' problem, they don't take the ball away. They don't get interceptions from their corners. Both went out and bought a running back. Both San Francisco and the Jets are built defensively up front with their D-line. Both are in a division with a Super Bowl team, Rams and the Niners, and both have a wide receiving core that's talented but don't really have a true number one. I think both teams have athletic young quarterbacks who, if they can stay upright in front of improved offensive lines, though neither is elite, San Francisco goes 4-12 to 9-7, and the Jets go 4-12 to around 8-8, 7-9 or 8-8.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Football morning in America via the Coward Global Satellite Network. Here is Peter King. All right, Peter, it's your 20th camp. Let's not talk about this one. I want to go back to your San Francisco 49ers camp. There's a lot of pressure on Garoppolo, John Lynch. They spent some money in free agency, D Ford, Quan Alexander. What was your vibe at Niners camp? Because I think they make a big jump this year, Peter.
Colin, I'm probably going to pick them to make the playoffs, in fact. You know, I've said if Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't slip on a banana peel in September, I think they're going to win 10 games. Now, that is a really, really good division. This could be one of the rare years where there could be three playoff teams out of one division, because I think the Seahawks are sleeping. I wouldn't call them giant, but I think they're sleeping. The Seahawks, basically, to me, are the Steelers of the NFC. You know, they haven't had a lot of placid camps in recent years in both Seattle and Pittsburgh, but both of them have placid and productive camps now. The 49ers, the one thing that I believe about them is that I think this is the year where all of the investment in the defensive line really pays off, because it isn't just DeForest Buckner now. Obviously, with D Ford, I think Solomon Thomas really is on a crucial year for him. And I think they've got a chance now to finally have that kind of defensive presence that's going to complement Garoppolo in that offense.
So I watched Arizona last night. I don't want to make a big deal out of the preseason, but the preseason does tell you things. I remember Victor Cruz out of UMass, undrafted, popped in preseason and went on to lead the Giants next 3 years in receptions. Dak Prescott popped in preseason, and here we are, Dak Prescott looking at $30, $35 million. Arizona struggled. Kyler struggled. Cliff Kingsbury struggled. Do you take anything from that, Peter?
No, I think we make far, far too much of preseason games. I mean, last week, talking about which young quarterback looked best in like five snaps. I mean, you know, it's just too early. And look, I am sure that Cliff Kingsbury, you know, is doing some experimentation. He doesn't know exactly who he's going to play in what situation yet. Some of the communication issues in that game really, in my opinion, are the result of players who've never played in that system before just simply trying to figure out. If this happens heavily in the third preseason game, I'd be worried. But again, nobody ever thought that the 2019 Cardinals are going to be a playoff team anyway. This is a year for Kyler Murray to get some calluses on his hand. You know, like when we're talking about batting practice in baseball. What do you do in March? You get calluses on your hand. You get ready to bat 550 times during the season. That's what this is about for Kyler Murray right now.
You know, there's a handful of quarterbacks in this league that I really love, but I do believe they're one more injury away from their front office having to consider a backup plan. Carson Wentz, Andrew Luck, as much as I love Andrew Luck, his injuries have become, Peter, a little bit of an enigma. We can't get a straight answer. What do you make of the Colts and this sort of...
Yeah, I mean, Colin, here's what I would say about the Indianapolis Colts and about the injuries as it relates to Andrew Luck. I think the biggest problem here is the mystery aspect of it. Like, I don't think anybody right now, even I bet you ask Chris Ballard and Frank Reich, and they're not going to be able to know right now, is Andrew Luck going to be able to play on September 20th or November 20th? You know, or is he going to play this year? That is the weird part of this injury. When I saw Andrew Luck in training camp, he was absolutely confident, positive that he was going to play opening day. And now, I don't know if you're in Indianapolis, if you have any idea when he's going to play. The only good thing about that is that Jacoby Brissett, I think, is probably one of the top 10 backups right now in football. So it's not like they have to mail in the season without Luck.
Yeah, he is surrounded now, which he wasn't for the first 3 years. Their defense can play. They've great offensive line, tight end play. I agree with you. He's got a better supporting cast. Now, you went to the Eagles camp as well. I believe they're as formidable. I think they'll win the NFC. That's my prediction. I like Howie Roseman. I like Wentz. What did you make of Wentz, the camp, the vibe, with a team that really feels poised to be excellent for a long, long time?
So in 2018, I sat with Wentz for 20 minutes after practice. 2019, I sat with Carson Wentz 20 minutes after practice. The Carson Wentz of 2019 is markedly different from he felt more freewheeling, more open, happier than he was a year ago. He was guarded a year ago. He was so sick of everybody talking to him about his injury. And I sensed a real, I don't want to say lack of confidence, but a real kind of wariness about whether he was going to be able to last year. Now, it turned out another injury ended up hurting him, but I think this year he's in a much different place. Now, having said that, Nate Sudfeld is one of the 10 most important players on that roster. You know, and everybody says, oh, my God, what are you talking about? Well, I mean, the backup quarterback in Philadelphia is a vital piece of the puzzle. It's why, if I were Howie Roseman, I might have tried to really stretch one more year and keep Foles. Yeah. But now that Foles is gone and they're going to miss Sudfeld maybe for like 2 or 3 games, when he comes back, he better be ready to play because you just never know.
You know, it's very hard. I've always said this. You know, the more successful somebody gets, the richer they get, it's harder to change who they are. Aaron Rodgers is successful. He's got a ring. He is super smart. And now you got a coach coming in, Matt LaFleur, who's young, unproven, and has a system very much like Shanahan, McVay, that you know, he doesn't love ad-libbing out of play calls. I think it'll be fine because I think Aaron's gifted. But I do wonder how the rub goes if Aaron does some ad-libbing and stuff that was called doesn't work. Do you have any concerns at all about that relationship?
I think you have to have concerns about the relationship because, you know, there were times where it was rocky between he and Mike McCarthy. And Aaron basically is a very strong-willed guy who knows what he likes. But I'll just tell you one story from that camp, Colin. You know, I found out that one of the plays in their scrimmage, a family night scrimmage, was a play that Aaron Rodgers changed at the line of scrimmage, even though the play he changed to hadn't been installed yet by Matt LaFleur. But he just explained it to everybody walking on the line. Here's what you're going to do, blah, blah, blah. and he ended up doing it, and they ran it fine, and they gained yardage on the play. And Matt LaFleur was over there like, he had no idea what was going on out on the field. But that is the strength of Aaron Rodgers. He is never going to stay in a play that he thinks is going to be an abject disaster. The one other thing about Rodgers and LaFleur that I found interesting, Matt LaFleur, when I said, how does it feel to be Aaron Rodgers' boss? He almost winced. He said, oh, I don't want to be called Aaron Rodgers' boss. We have sort of a collaborative relationship. That's the way it has to be with the play designer, play caller, and the quarterback. So, you know, we'll see how it goes, Colin. The only problem that I foresee coming, in my opinion, Aaron Rodgers is not necessarily a consistently tempo quarterback.
Right.
He wants to survey the landscape and see what he has. And I think Matt LaFleur wants to play fast, 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 fast. We'll see how that goes. I don't know how that marriage is quite going to work.
Analytics are changing sports. Certainly baseball, that was the first sport to make major changes. Basketball now, analytics are shoot threes and no mid-range jumpers. Analytics are becoming very cruel to running backs, whereas you can make an argument you don't sign them to a second long contract. You're at the Chargers camp, Melvin Gordon. I just ran into him at the airport. Great, great kid, but he knows the reality of what's happening to his position. Similarly, Zeke in Dallas wants to get paid 2 years early. So you've been covering this league for 30 years. Maybe it's cyclical, but Peter, does it not feel like the Melvin Gordons and Zekes, if not being eliminated, are being marginalized in this league now, in this sport?
I don't think Ezekiel Elliott and Melvin Gordon have the same impact on their teams. If I were to guess right now, I would guess that the Chargers would be comfortable is the wrong word, would be okay with playing a significant part of this season without Melvin Gordon, whereas the Cowboys can say whatever they want. If they don't have Ezekiel Elliott opening day, there's going to be a lot of unease in that locker room, because this is probably as much as any team in football, a team that wants to live on the ground.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Chargers are Phillip Rivers' team. And I think Austin Eckler and the backup Jackson, I think, are both going to make the Chargers feel like we can be okay and we can win without Melvin Gordon. And again, the Chargers did not invent what's happening to the, you know, in the NFL right now. But I think the general manager, Tom Telesco, has to feel like, listen, if we pay Melvin Gordon $12, $14 million a year, that's just going to be one guy on our defense, a young guy that we're not going to be able to sign. So I think, and plus, I mean, Gordon's got another year. So I don't think the Chargers feel like they absolutely, from what I've read, They don't feel like they absolutely have to do something with Melvin Gordon. And if he doesn't come in, he doesn't come in.
All right, Football Morning in America, Peter King, NBCSports.com, brave enough to wear a long-sleeve black shirt in the Southern California sun. it's great having you on again.
Hey, when you've had a couple of melanomas, Colin, the long-sleeve shirt doesn't really bother you as much as wondering what's happening under your skin.
Fair enough, Peter. Have a continued great summer. We love your stuff. NBCSports.com, Football Morning in America, Peter King.